south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, I'm back in the saddle again after about a month of trekking through Eastern and Western Europe. As usual, I spent some time in Spain, the Latin American mother country. In Spanish, Latinos call it La Casa Matriz. Translation, the parent. And of course, we all know there's a great deal of difference between Spain, a supposedly first world country, and the rest of Latin America, all of which are third world countries. Though, if you ask anyone from Chile, Costa Rica, or Argentina, they'll tell you, with their noses jacked up in the air, that they're not like the rest of Latin countries. They're more like second world countries, on the fast track to becoming first world, which right away tells you that that person has an incomplete education, because the definition of a second world country is a former Soviet republic. Go ahead, look it up, you'll see I'm right. Oh, and by the way, the definition of a fourth world country, that would be most African countries. So it's true, a country can transition from fourth world to third world, as in the case of some of the oil-rich northern African countries, but it's impossible for a third world country to transition to a second world country. Though in a very few cases, like South Korea and Singapore, they have actually made that jump to first world status. That means they've made the jump from third world to first world. So why am I bringing this up? Well, sometimes you'll be sitting in a room with some people who are educated or slightly educated or think they're educated, Latins that is, and they'll tell you about how their country's been progressing in the last few years, especially with technology, cell phones, the internet, and all that, insisting that sooner or later their country will become first world. That means they obviously don't know there's only been two cases in history where third or fourth world countries have popped into first world status, and I just mentioned them. And none of them, I might add, were Latin countries. I mean, look at Puerto Rico. It's had the best chance of all scratching its way out of a third world hole, being that it's a U.S. protectorate, a U.S. territory, and Puerto Ricans have U.S. passports and U.S. aid and bailouts and all that. But still, even before that unfortunate hurricane incident, most of the places there, except in the tourist areas, were completely third world and the government completely bankrupt. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, like I said, it's pretty much an impossibility that any of the 20 Latin American countries is ever going to achieve first world status. None have ever done so yet. Of course, every tourist area in Latin America looks completely first world until you get a couple blocks outside the sun and fun and business and hotel districts. Then many of the neighborhoods start looking like Detroit, which begs the question, will the U.S. remain a first world country? Not likely if you're looking at the trends. In fact, recently I ran into a couple of upscale gringos from Detroit. These were people that never lived directly in the city. And you know what? To a person, they said, Detroit is coming back. Coming back from what? And you know, just like practically all big Latin American cities, there are the good, the bad, and the ugly areas, and wealthy people congregate in upscale first world style subdivisions and neighborhoods. So if you want, you can completely isolate yourself from the bad sections of town, and that's what a lot of people do. And it's especially true in Latin America, too, if you move out to the suburbs of a big Latin city. And you longtime listeners might recall that I spent a couple of shows talking about moving to the suburbs of a big Latin city. Talk about living the good life, and that Latin prices, too. Well, as long as you stay clear of the tourist areas, it's almost as if parts of Minnesota were airlifted to Latin America. Imagine Minneapolis with mangoes and palm trees. I'm not kidding. You have to come down here and see it for yourself. Yep, and you listeners who are signing up for my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar, you'll get a big taste of that. You know, a good healthy dose of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. Oh, and speaking of the upcoming seminar, again, it'll be in and around Guatemala, Central America, smack dab in the middle of the Altiplano region, you know, where there's springtime weather all year long and you do not need heating or air conditioning. Talk about tiny utility bills, which people find hard to believe until they actually visit the Altiplano and see for themselves, as opposed to what's typically on the minds of most first world people when they think of Central or South America. They're thinking hot and humid, just laying around a pool and surrounded by umbrella drinks weather. True for the beach and coastal areas, but the Altiplano, you see, is upwards of 4,000 feet, which tempers the weather dramatically. and people coming to my July seminar will get the full effect. By the way, you can still take advantage of the early bird discount prices. I'll be running those through the end of May, so you still have a couple of weeks to sign up and get in on the discounts. For all the info and sign-up details, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. Now, speaking of Latin American first world country wannabes, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Argentina. Now, it turns out Argentina, Chile, and Costa Rica are the three Latin countries where you'll see the most obvious European mix of blood. In other words, you'll see an awful lot of people that don't look like stereotypical Latinos. That means a bit taller, lighter skin, lighter hair, and a lot fewer pure indigenous types. And believe me, the Argentines, Chileans, and Costa Ricans really capitalize on that, and thus think in a lot of ways they're a cut above all their Latin country neighbors. In other words, they're a bit more racist and classist than the rest of Latin America. And believe me, if you're down here long enough, you'll see it in action. However, just because a good percentage of the population look European or North American does not mean they're any better at running their own countries. In fact, they really suck at it. But lookism and classism prevails. So when you see a person that looks almost gringo or European, the other more stereotypical looking Latinos instantly judge him or her as more upper class, even more intelligent. And get this, isn't it funny if you happen to see a photo of any Latin American country congress, most of the people are European looking. In other words, all Latin country governments are racially skewed at the high end towards whiter, taller people. Yet they still absolutely suck at their jobs. Well, they don't suck at institutional corruption or personal financial enrichment, because you know, for any politician worldwide, that's a prerequisite for the job. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh yeah, Argentina. In fact, Argentina has a terrible record of destroying their own economy about every 10 or 15 years. And those terrible ups and downs have been going on for almost 100 years now. And as far as recommending Argentina as a good place for expats to live, work, retire, and or do business, as far as doing business, that would be fine if, and only if, you strictly worked on the internet and didn't have a brick and mortar place. I've heard from many sources, it's a very difficult country to have a legitimate business in any other way. And why is that? Well, a lot of reasons. Number one, the Argentine government wants to be first world in every way, which means they have an extremely bloated government. And it's not the typical bloated sit on your fat ass government you see in most other Latin countries. They, like Colombia, Chile, and Costa Rica, really try to enforce those laws, especially when it comes to collecting tax money. So then, what else stifles business there? Well, they're much more unionized than other Latin countries, and since their government loves to print money, sound familiar? The inflation rate for the country has been running around 25% for the last few years, meaning if your income is in US dollars, you're on top of the world there. However, since the Argentine government and banks know that, they put heavy restrictions on US dollars. So don't think it's easy to move down to Argentina and just have US dollars transferred down there. Oh, you can get a U.S. bank account and have dollars transferred there, of course. The thing is, trying to get your hands on your own dollars. If you can and convert them over to the local funny money peso, you will live like a king or a queen, at least for the time being, which is why there's such a huge U.S. dollar black market in Argentina. In fact, here's some excerpts from an article you just have to hear. Came out about a week ago. Of course, I'll throw in my two cents and comments along the way, whether they're necessary or not. But first, let me preface it by saying that many times I've mentioned that Latin America is now addicted to credit and payment plans. In fact, I remember at one show, I told you about looking into a window of a furniture store where they had a chair, more like a stool, priced at around 10 bucks in the local funny money. And on the sales sticker, it said, 10 bucks cash or buy it on the payment plan. You realize that's a dollar a month for 12 months, right? That'd be 10 bucks plus 20% interest. The point is, as we all know, at least I hope we do, if you can't scrounge up 10 bucks cash, you shouldn't be buying it in the first place. Yet it's amazing that here in Latin America, you can put a $10 item on a year-long payment plan. I mean, really, it's the same amount of paperwork, whether you're financing 5 grand or 10 bucks. And if you think that's economic craziness and the world's way out of whack, especially here in Latin America where credit has gone wild, you longtime listeners will remember the show I did where a big first world-like shopping center had valet parking for a buck and a half. How cool? Cooler yet? If you were short that kind of heavy coin, you could put it on your Visa card. Hey, there's a lot of levels to that kind of stupidness, huh? Yep, and I even have a photo of the valet desk up there on YouTube showing the $1.50 charge and a nice professionally made sign with the Visa logo on it saying you could put it on plastic. So the bottom line is that the average Latino, even the above average Latino, has about zero money in the bank. And just like upscale Americans, upscale Latins have a fistful of credit cards that are pretty much all maxed out. Which brings me to this new article about Argentina's economic system, which says it all. This comes from Justin Spittler, the editor of the KC Daily Dispatch. Justin Spittler. Bet he got his ass whooped a lot as a child. You gotta wonder why Grandpa Spittler didn't change that a long time ago. But who knows, maybe it made Justin tougher. Primed him for success and all that. But I digress as usual. Anyway, as the article starts, and I'll paraphrase here, he's interviewing an Argentino about the economic, financial, and credit system in Argentina. And the guy starts out by saying, you know, we Argentines love the installment plan. He says, if you can get 12 months, that's good, but 24 months is even better. In fact, the Argentine guy that said that was a lawyer and should have known better. Anyway, Mr. Spittler, and this Argentine lawyer were chatting in a pub in Palermo, an Italian neighborhood in Buenos Aires. Yep, there's that European connection again. Palermo, as in Palermo, Italy. Then it says, now, in case you haven't heard, inflation in Argentina is off the charts. And last year, it says, the official inflation rate in Argentina was 25%, but you know how governments lie. The year before, it was only 37%. Everyday goods and services in the country are 71% more expensive than they were at the start of 2016, at least according to government, and governments lie. And of course, they always lie to make themselves look better. All right, meet Johnny again. Now, to put that in a more personal perspective regarding day-to-day life for you and me, imagine that everything you bought and purchased and every bill you received was 71% more costly than it was at the beginning of 2016. In that case, every time you got your paycheck, you'd want to spend the whole thing. You'd never want to put money in a savings account. That'd be stupid. That would be like putting your money in the bank and getting a negative interest rate. Negative interest rates. Now, where have I heard that before? Anyway, then the article says, that's why Argentines love the installment plan. It allows them to pay off purchases over time using a continuously devaluing currency. In other words, it helps them reduce the harm caused by inflation. Then it says in bold type, but why should you care about this? After all, Buenos Aires is over 4,000 miles south of the U.S. Then it says, but wait, there's more. Sky-high inflation isn't the only thing wrong with this country's money and economic system. It's also very difficult to get money or loans here. You see, ATMs in Buenos Aires are stingy. Most only let you withdraw 2,000 pesos at a time. That's about 91 U.S. dollars. By the way, very few ATMs in Argentina will spit out U.S. dollars directly. And to make matters worse, most ATMs will stick you with a 10% withdrawal fee, and that adds up rather quickly. And that's how the money black market came about. Because of this, many locals now have what they call a cash guy, a gray market guy on the street that'll charge you only 5% instead of the banks or ATM machines 10% withdrawal fees. They're basically dealers in Argentina's underground money market. In short, Argentina's monetary and economic system has serious problems, and they're getting worse. The Argentine peso is now in a free fall. It's down 16% on the year. That makes it one of the worst performing currencies on the planet. However, it's the gold standard compared to Venezuela or Zimbabwe. Meanwhile, it's trading at an all-time low against the U.S. dollar, funny money. So right now, everyone wants out of the Argentine peso. Though, as you might expect, Argentina's government is doing everything it can to stop the bleeding. Just 2 weeks ago, Argentina's central bank spent $4.3 billion to prop up the currency, but the measure failed. Then they took even more drastic measures. Last week, they raised their key interest rate by 300 basis points, or 3%. That's incredibly aggressive compared to most central banks, who just raised their rates by just 25 or 50 basis points, 0.25% or 0.5%. On the world stage, that's considered a monster rate hike, and it came out of the blue. Of course, Argentina's central bank did this because it desperately wants to generate demand for the Argentine pesos. It hopes sky-high interest rates compared to other countries will lure investors to Argentina. But it didn't work either, and the peso crashed the next day on the news. So then, the Argentine central bank did something even more surprising. They shocked the financial world by raising key interest rates by yet another 300 basis points, or 3%. The country's benchmark rate now sits at 33.25%, which is 20 times higher than the Federal Reserve's benchmark rate. And wouldn't you know it, that also blew up in the government's face. The next day, the Argentine peso plummeted another 5%, just based on that rate hike. Those are astronomical banking moves. Remember, we're talking about purchasing power and the money that people carry around in their wallets. Then it says, if Argentina can't get a grip on the situation soon, life could become extremely difficult for the average Argentine. Of course, Argentines have been here before and seen it and done it. The country's had about one major financial crisis every decade. The government has destroyed its currency 4 times in the last century. And you know what that means? You wake up the next day and all of a sudden you're reading the paper and see on TV that there's a brand new currency. They've either dropped a few zeros off the old one or created a new one altogether. Of course, with pretty brand new colors and artwork, with yet another pompous genocidal dictator staring or maybe laughing at you from that brand new bill. By the way, that was me, Johnny, adding that pompous dictator bit because it's true. You know what they say, one man's genocidal dictator is another man's freedom fighter. Or something like that. Hey, just think of Mao, Stalin, or Uncle Fidel. All right, then the article goes on to say, that's why Argentine fathers tell their sons that the peso is for spending, not saving. It's also why wealthy Argentines have historically stored wealth in other more stable currencies like the US dollar and British pound, mostly across the border in Uruguay. But here's the thing. None of today's paper currencies are truly sound. They're all backed by broken promises. So why should Argentina be any different? Every major economy in the world is either bankrupt or broke. Oh, and this is interesting. It says last December, Argentina's president, Mauricio Macri, had said on the record, Bitcoin is already a valuable part of our society. And he also said that Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies could act as sort of a crisis currency of sorts. Now, there's a guy who, though he may be a scumbag, pustulant politician, sees the writing on the wall for fiat currencies. And you know, it seems like there's no end of bad news coming out of Argentina. Hey, I like to balance the show out with the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, but with Argentina, the only good news, which is kind of bad news in disguise, is that old saying, the time to buy or invest is when there's blood in the streets. Speaking of no end of bad news in Argentina, listen to this. Here's an article that came out on May 4th. Hey, and it's even in English, so I don't even have to take a stab at translating it. It says, bakers from Buenos Aires, Argentina, gave away 5 tons of bread on Wednesday in a general protest against proposed utility rate hikes they insist will put them out of business. The massive bread giveaway took place outside congressional headquarters. Now, that's a new kind of publicity stunt, huh? So what's it all about? Well, it's a symbolic action that aims to bring attention to the situation where 40,000 bakers in Argentina are saying they're suffering because bakeries can't operate normally as it is under present working conditions, and they either close or end up working informally, off the books. It goes on to say the president of the Argentine Bakery Association, Leo Balansky, that sounds real Latin, huh? Well, that just goes to show, like I said, Argentina's just loaded with people of European extraction. Anyway, the president of the Bakery Association, Leo Balansky, who I'm sure speaks Spanish and probably Polish much better than I do, said hundreds lined up at the plaza facing Congress, waiting in line more than a half an hour to receive their free kilo of bread, with the bakers calling for an emergency utility rate rollback to the prices of 2017. Then it says the protest is only the latest in a series by various businesses and public organizations opposed to austerity measures and the elimination of subsidies proposed by Argentine President Mauricio Macri. Among the subsidies the president wants to eliminate are those of gas, electricity, water, and public transportation. Why? Because the government's broke and cannot afford to subsidize utilities anymore. with President Macri insisting the measures are necessary to combat the high inflation rate and large budget deficit. Now get this, it says in Argentina, with inflation running at more than 20%, bakers also denounced a sharp recent rise in the price of their main ingredient, wheat flour, saying that the cost has climbed by more than 100% just in the past 2 weeks. And, Senor Balansky added, some bakery owners have seen their monthly electric bills rise from 2,500 pesos, around 122 bucks, to 25,000 pesos, some $1,222 in a period of just 3 years. A 10 times or 1,000% increase in utilities in just that short time period, leaving bakers with a decision to either close or operate in the black market off the books. And the hits just keep on coming. In Spanish, they call them golpes. Now, remember I said that Argentina is a heavily unionized country? And since all Latin countries are running on significant lag time, that means everything you see happening up in the U.S. usually ends up down here in Latin America in some way, some 5, 10, 15, even 20 years later. The same thing goes for unions. You know, in the States, they had their heyday back in the 60s and 70s. But these days, up where you are, union memberships are at historic lows. Yet still strong and powerful, and you guessed it, the public sector. Figures, right? Well, here in Latin America, at least in some countries here in Latin America, unions are at the stage they were 30 or 40 years ago in the States, like Argentina, just coming into their own. That means big membership, a lot of power, which goes hand in hand with high levels of corruption and graft, etc. Think Teamsters, Mafia, Jimmy Hoffa style. Whereas in smaller, less developed Latin countries like Honduras, El Salvador, Peru, Belize, etc., they too have big public sector unions, but they're pretty toothless. And there's a big union component in all Latin countries that have clothing and textile factories, commonly known as sweatshops. And even though those factories have many thousands of union members, they're also toothless and rarely go on strike. So in the majority of Latin countries, especially in the smaller ones, unions exist but are pretty weak. But still, there are a few Latin countries like Costa Rica, Argentina, and Chile that have rather strong unions in the public sector that could shut a country down in a heartbeat if they just call a strike. Now, as you might expect, teachers' unions are big here in Latin America, just as they are in the States. However, only in places like Costa Rica, Chile, and Argentina do they have the power and the numbers to throw their weight around and disrupt the whole country's educational system. Take this article that just came out 4 days ago from the Buenos Aires Times. The headline says, "Teachers' strike affects 5.5 million students." So what are they striking about this time? Well, they want the government to reinstate the national collective wage bargaining process, which is eliminated by a decree in January. They also oppose a 15% wage increase, citing year-over-year inflation rates of over 25%. Oh, and doesn't this sound familiar? It says National Cabinet Chief Marcos Peña said this weekend the strike was politically motivated. Well, of course, right? However, it says Education Minister Alejandro Fianaccio described the teachers' union, CTERA, as a support group for the Moneo family, referring to corrupt union kingpin Hugo Moneo, who recently led a massive street protest against the national government. Shades of Jimmy Hoffa again, huh? Then it explains that teachers in Argentina have three very powerful unions. One's called SUTBA, one's called UTE, and also a private teachers union called SADP. All right, you get the idea. As a gringo or European expat, you really do not want to live in a Latin country that has powerful public labor unions that continuously call strikes. Now that's bad enough, but when you've got 25% or more inflation per year, a bankrupt government and currency controls on U.S. dollars. Man, that's a triple whammy, and if you move there, you're asking for trouble. I know, a lot of you will say, Doug Casey, who I really like. And I admit, he's a lot smarter than I am. He seems to like the place enough to have moved there. Well, way out in the boonies anyway, which is always my recommendation too. And for him, it's working, or apparently working, because they've set up a little colony, like a sort of Galt's Gulch. Though you pretty much have to be independently wealthy to set up shop there yourself. I know for a fact that houses are going for $500,000 and up. By the way, I've seen some of those houses, and you could build one of those from scratch on an empty lot for a quarter or less of what they're charging. And I'm not blowing hot air here when I say I know about construction. The fact is, I've built 13 houses and buildings here in Latin America already. All of them, first world all the way. For 30 to 50 bucks a square foot. That means a 2,000 square foot house, 60 to 100 grand. Meanwhile, they're asking 5 to 10 times as much for these houses in this real estate listing. Hey, if you don't believe me, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link to the real estate office there. Oh, and one final story here. You know, for the last month, I was traveling through Europe, and I'd run into traveling gringos here and there, mostly older, retired folks, traveling the world not on a strict budget, but in style. Most of them rather intelligent and wealthy, so they should have known better. And what do I mean by that? Well, I actually met 4 of them who'd been pickpocketed in the last couple of weeks. One of them, while touring the Acropolis in Greece. Have you been there? It's spectacular. 2 of them, while riding the metro in Greece. And one of them, while riding the metro in Rome. And I'll tell you, man, so many gringos are stupid. Each and every one of them had his or her wallet or some valuables in their back pockets. You never do that. Isn't that the first lesson in safety when you're traveling in foreign countries, especially using public transportation? So once you're in a thick crowd, the trick is for the no-goodnik guy to come up behind you and just kind of deftly remove your wallet. You've seen that a million times in magic shows, right? Or you get distracted by someone right in front of you. Meanwhile, there's an accomplice behind you ripping you off. So why am I bringing this up? Because I get so many emails from people wondering about security and getting robbed in Latin America. And yes, it does happen. Most often, 2 stupid gringos who do things like leave their valuables and their wallets in their back pockets. Or these days, when backpacks are so popular, even with an upscale crowd, you know, they've got L.L. Bean backpacks worth a couple $100, right? Well, the no-goodniks aren't stupid. They could spot an upscale backpack a mile away, too, as well as real leather brand name coats and shoes, or real Nike or Reebok sneakers, too. So who do you think they're going to target? Same with real expensive high-end luggage. Like the Swiss Army Knife Company. They make luggage. Man, is it expensive. And the bad guys can spot it in a second. Oh, but it's so stylish, and you're making a fashion statement as you travel, right? Good luck with that. And the underpaid baggage handlers at the airport. Hey, if I was a crook, that's who I'd go for. Yes, we Americans like our upscale traveling items, don't we? I'll tell you, it's much better to look like a rumpled 8th grade geography teacher on sabbatical. You know, kind of a poor man's Indiana Jones. Than the North Face or L.L. Bean window display mannequin on safari. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.